Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them
free. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your
mind. Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, brain masseur. It's time for your brain massage.
Truth. Served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the mind.
The French say ironique. Late Latin says ironicus, borrowing from Socrates, who said it ironicos. In America, we say irony. Quote, a state of affairs or an event that seems deliberately contrary to what one expects and is often amusing as a result, end quote. Now, some part of this definition might not apply to the following case of irony. Some might call it ironic that Lance Armstrong is held in near universal contempt for using lies to steal sports glory, while politicians use lies to steal the power they use to enslave us. Armstrong is despised for doping, and Obama is praised for making dopes of us all. But that's not the kind of irony that I have in mind today. What irony, then? President Abraham Lincoln used the slave issue to rally support for his war to save the Union. And today, a black man has become the president. Hurrah! Only, now, he's about to preside over the dissolution of that very Union. Isn't that ironique? Lincoln frees the blacks to save the Union, and a free black man today is being perhaps moved by forces, some of which perhaps are beyond his control, to destroy the very Union Lincoln used the slavery issue to preserve. For the record, anyone who knows Lincoln's whole story knows that the slave issue was a genuine and authentic concern to him. Likewise, however, everyone knowing the whole story of the so-called Civil War knows that slavery was fading out, even in the South, and that Lincoln knew that, and that he capitalized on the slave issue to help him recruit support for the real point of the war between the states, and that is the question of secession, or, as he put it so often, the preservation of the Union. That was his focus and his main concern. And Lincoln equated the preservation of the Union to, and directly to, the whole concept of preserving liberty and justice for all in the world, which is another irony, since he virtually trampled the Constitution under his feet in order to, as he thought, preserve it. So it's so full of irony. Okay, this gets into deeper water than I intend to tread today, but here's the point. Isn't it ironique that a white man used the issue of freeing a black man in order to preserve the Union from dissolution so that today a black man can become president and preside over the dissolution of that Union? And it seems everyone sees this as coming. Even Hannity is forecasting a dissolution of the Union if the federal government continues what he called its, quote, radicalized abusive pattern, end quote. It's interesting, however, to note that virtually no one is talking about the coming dissolution of the Union in terms of civil war. Instead, the analogy that is consistently used or referred to is the War for Independence, or the Revolutionary War. Now, progressives have been calling for a revolution for a long time. Two of their poets, John and Paul, wrote one of their best anthems, Revolution. Remember that one? I don't know if you've ever read the lyrics of that song, but it might be nice if some of the kiddies go back and pay attention. Did you know that back then, even the Beatles seemed to be concerned about that crowd who wanted to change the Constitution? Let me read a little bit of the lyric to you. Let's see here. Here it is. You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. You tell me that it's evolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know, you can count me out, end quote. Then it goes blah, 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 so on. Ah, here it is. Quote, you say you'll change the Constitution. Well, you know, we all want to change your head. You tell me it's the institution. Well, you know, you better free your mind instead, end quote. So, you know, it's sufficiently vague there. I suppose you can take it any way you want. And I don't suppose that John Lennon got everything he wanted into that lyric. Probably it was significantly influenced by marketing considerations and by Paul's less radical sensitivities. But my point is that way back in the mid-60s, they were planning on changing the Constitution. The target is the Constitution. Another of their poets a little later used to scream, "We want the world and we want it now!" You remember that? That old Jim Morrison, who finally found the door, by the way. But anyway, you know, if a preacher raises his voice and belts out a bold declaration of this sort, the little worldlings squirm and blanch and gasp and say, "Oh, he shouldn't make such an emotional demonstration," or they get all puffed up and say, "How dare he holler at me?" And the same squishy-headed Christianettes crank up the volume on their favorite rock group and revel as they scream, "We want the world and we want it now. You expect me to take you seriously?" Ah, you're a joke. But anyway, many popular blogs are warning about the coming revolution. Here's one I read somewhat regularly, Godfather Politics. Perhaps you've come across that one. And the title of this blog is The American Revolutionary War of 2013. He cites several signs of the rising tide of revolution. And he notices what I've noticed, that it's not only the left threatening revolution anymore. Now it's coming from the right as well. And by the way, I love that guy who's out there saying he's not about right or the wrong, just the real. I wish we had some real serious thinkers these days. I mean, anyway, I, by the way, I like this guy. But come on, like what is real can never be right, or what is wrong can never be real. But it's cute, so, you know, if this country needs anything right now, however, it's a clarification of right and wrong. We sure don't need our side contributing to the idea that these categories are irrelevant and that somehow these are outside of reality. Now, maybe I'm just a little too philosophical. Anyway, this blogger mentions a political commentator who suggested that, quote, poor people might start to riot and rebel against the government demanding more handouts, end quote. And he mentions what happened in Argentina. Kirchner, president of Argentina, has been a model redistributor. No doubt the envy of Obama and company. And some of you think, oh, how noble, how generous, the idea of distributing the wealth to the poor. Kirchner has spent millions of Argentinians' money assisting the poor in her country. Free health care, you know, the works. But you know, it's an amazing thing. The poor and the rich both have the same human nature, after all. Yeah, the poor are greedy too. You've heard me say it often, greed is not a sin exclusive to the rich. Poor people suffer from that malady as well. So the poor in Argentina began to feel like they were entitled to more. Because you see, when you try to divide up the wealth to all the poor, more and more people decide it's advantageous to join the ranks of the poor and get in line. And as the community of the poor increases, the amount available to be distributed and divided up among them decreases. And well, at some point, and that's not the only dynamic that takes place in this scenario. That little bit of grease there. But the poor begin to demand more from the government and more and more. I mean, free health care. Well, that's nice. What about free food? What about free shelter? I mean, they were told just show up at the hospital or the doctor's office and the bill would be sent to Kirchner or to her government. So they decide, hey, well, we've got a great idea. How about we just show up at the grocery store, take what we need, and, you know, Kirchner can pay the bill. And the people got riled up and rioted. They blocked the entrances to grocery stores. Yeah. And they began looting. Yeah. And then just, you know, send the bill to Obama, right? Of course, this isn't going to work. I mean, the whole point is that this doling out the from the public trough is supposed to keep the poor under control. And then bring them out faithfully to vote during the elections, you see. They're not supposed to be misbehaving like this. So the benevolent Kirchner sent out the troops. And I think it was 2 killed and 137 arrested. While the generous Argentinians watched the people they've taught to believe should expect handouts decide now to simply help themselves. On the news, just rioting and looting. And, quote, local news showed video of men and women and children hauling away food, televisions, and even refrigerators, end quote. This is disgusting. Don't cry for me, Argentina. And if you work long enough or hard enough to convince the poor that the reason they are poor is because someone down the street has something they don't have, and that this is a sinful situation, you will finally give them what is needed to justify their greed impulse. You keep telling them that they have an inalienable right or an unconditional right to a share of the nation's wealth. That's nonsense. And that you are going to see that they get it, at some point, they're going to turn around and eat you, buddy. But now, not only are the poor being primed for revolution, a very significant measure of what we call the middle class is beginning to stir uncomfortably from their apathy. Obama's getting their attention. I mean, the sleepy eye of that, quote, silent majority, end quote, is blinking in the garish light of reality as the sun of righteousness rises over the horizon of this generation, renewing the promise of his first coming. Quote, the people which, Bible thump alert, the people which sat in darkness saw great light, and to them which sat in the region and shadow of death, light is sprung up, end quote. Spring up, O light, warm the eyelids of these who sleep in the bliss of ignorance. Scatter the power of the dark Lord so that at least your own may once more cast off the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. You know, last week I told you what would get Obama's attention. Mass in the streets of Washington by a million or more, holding your Constitution in one hand and a fresh Declaration of Independence in the other. And on the Mall, declare anew the truth. We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. You didn't give us our right to bear arms, Mr. Obama, and you have no power, no right, no authority to take it away. And demand that liar-in-chief be held accountable for his betrayal of his oath to uphold and protect the Constitution, if he even really took such an oath. Because unless something like that takes place pretty soon here, I mean, massing in the streets and peaceful protests, I'm afraid we are heading for an open conflict of arms. I wish someone up there, I mean Washington, D.C., would take notice of what's really going on. Or maybe they are, and it's what they want. The exact number is eight. Eight states now have had a sufficient number of citizens in those states to petition the White House for secession, to qualify for a formal response from the White House, who promised that if 25,000 people present a petition, the White House would then respond. And in these states, South Carolina, North Carolina, Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, Texas, and Louisiana, each of those states have had at least 25,000, some 30,000, 37,000, so on, but at least 25,000 people in each of those states has petitioned the White House for to acknowledge their right to peacefully secede from the Union. Now, when did you ever see so many people talking secession? Well, not since the Civil War has there been this much unrest and such an open call for secession. And the point is this, significant people are talking this way nowadays. And I mean, you know, it's not just your fringe group nut jobs, but serious people are beginning to question whether the Union is actually preserving our liberty and not rather becoming a modern King George tyranny. The issue of gun confiscation might be the trigger that ignites an open rebellion against the government. I don't know. I mean, already several sheriffs have declared they will not enforce confiscation laws coming from the White House or any house for that matter. Many states have presented legislation in their legislatures, intending to block any effort on the part of the federal government to act on confiscation of firearms from the people. Now, when I get back, I'm going to talk to you about a Christian's responsibility in this matter. How ironic. Lincoln used the cause of the black man's freedom to inspire support for his effort to preserve the Union. And now we have a black president, which I think is wonderful in that regard, but whose policies, unfortunately, tend toward the dissolution of the very Union. Abraham Lincoln used the freedom of the slaves to protect. And the Constitution that Lincoln thought he was protecting and upholding while violating it, which is itself a kind of irony, is now being shredded by the very people that very Constitution freed. I mean, you see, it's just packed with all kinds of irony. I'll be right back. We're going to skip the break and just roll right along.
Stand by. Five, the Brain four, Massage Show three, is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, Brain Masseur, and Paul Revere's Lantern Lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. What is a Christian to do? Irony is defined as, quote, a state of affairs or an event. That seems deliberately contrary to what one expects and is often amusing as a result, end quote. Now, irony that is not amusing is what? What do you call something that is ironic in every aspect except is not funny? Unfunny irony. Kind of sounds like a love song gone wrong, huh? How ironic. Fact is, irony often strikes our funny bone, but the word irony does not refer to something that's funny, okay? So when I say it is ironic that Lincoln used the freedom of the blacks as a cause to inspire support for his war to preserve the Union, and that now, a black man is using that freedom in a manner that is leading to the dissolution of the union. I'm not making a joke. Obama is surrounded by voices calling for him to move toward confiscation of our guns. And make no mistake about it, that's what he wants to do. This will be the crossing of the Rubicon for Obama if he chooses to go in that direction. I think he's going to push at this, run at it, then back up, push again, float it out there. I don't think he's actually going to go for confiscation, though. Not yet. But if he does, he will have crossed the Rubicon. He will have set up an avalanche of consequences that will be all but impossible to reverse. I agree that, quote, a number of people will be like sheep being led to the slaughter and turn over their guns at first request, end quote, as the Germans in Hitler's day when he took away their guns. But by the way, that reminds me of something I received from one of my listeners that I wanted you to hear. Get a load of this.
Let's play a game of who am I? Listen very carefully to the clues. I was born in one country, but raised in another country. My father was born in yet another country. I was not his only child. He fathered several children with numerous women. I became very close to my mother, as my father showed no interest in me. My mother died at an early age from cancer. Although my father deserted me and my mother raised me, I later wrote a book idolizing my father, not my mother. Later in life, questions arose over my real name. My birth records were sketchy. No one was able to produce a legitimate, reliable birth certificate. I grew up practicing one faith, but then converted to Christianity, as it was widely accepted in my new country. I wrote a book about my struggles growing up. It was clear to those who read my memoirs that I had difficulties accepting that my father abandoned me as a child. I became active in local politics when I was in my 30s. Then, with help behind the scenes, I literally burst onto the world scene as a candidate for national office in my 40s. They said I had a golden tongue and I could talk anyone into anything. I had a virtually non-existent resume, little work history, and no experience in leading a single organization. Yet I was a powerful speaker, and citizens were drawn to me as though I were a magnet. I drew incredibly large crowds during my public appearances. This bolstered my ego. At first, my political campaign focused on my country's foreign policy. I was very critical of my country in the last war and seized every opportunity to bash my country. But what launched my rise to national prominence were my views on the country's economy. I called my campaign a people's campaign. I was the surprise candidate because I emerged from outside the traditional path of politics and I was able to gain widespread popular support. I knew that if I merely offered the people hope, together we could change our country and the world. So I started to make my speeches sound like they were on behalf of the downtrodden, the poor, the ignorant, to include persecuted minorities. My true views were not widely known, and I kept them unknown until after I became my nation's leader. I had to carefully guard reality, as anybody could have easily found out what I really believed if they had simply read my writings and examined those people that I associated with. I'm glad they didn't do it, because then I became the most powerful man in the world. And then the world learned the truth. Who am I? I am Adolf Hitler. If you were thinking of someone else, you should be afraid. Very afraid.
How about that? Isn't that interesting? I agree that many will surrender their guns like lemmings. However, there are millions of other Americans that will stand and fight like a mother bear defending her cubs, and those fights are often to the death of the mother bear or the aggressor, end quote. And you know what? I tell you, Americans are different in this regard. There are about 315 million people in the United States and well over 300 million guns in their hands. Now, that's the number of guns registered. There are many more than that, of course. Some people think people are becoming so upset at Obama's trampling of the Constitution that there have been plots to assassinate him. You know, when you really look at this closely, though, the truth is the groups that are found to be participating in this sort of nonsense and talking about that kind of thing are usually these radical fringe race-hating or Jew-hating groups. These are not representative of the people I'm talking about here, the general population. For example, recently, four soldiers were arrested back in August last year for a conspiracy to assassinate Obama. I don't know if you've heard about it. It's believed they are part of a group called FEAR, an acronym that stands for Forever Enduring Always Ready. And it's an alleged anarchist group thought to be identified with Zog conspiracists. Now, what's a Zog conspiracist? Well, this Zog is an acronym that stands for Zionist Occupation Government, or Zionist Occupied Government. And the idea, it's kind of a Hitler sort of thing, you know, blame it all on the Jew. It's believed that the Jews are the source of all evil in the world and that they worm their way into high levels of government and take control. Hence, they occupy government, you see. So it's a Zionist occupied government is the idea. By the way, Zionism is not exclusively a Jewish thing. It includes anyone who believes the world will be or should be ruled by Zion or by a ruler from Zion or in Zion, or that such a ruler will come. Think about it. Or at least it refers to the fear some have, that there is such a Zionist conspiracy at work in the world. Are you ready for some more irony? These guys think like radical jihad-headed Muslims. Really, you know, a lot of similarities here. The same people Obama likes to surround himself with and help along in the world. Yet, like Muslim Brotherhood and all that. Yet they wanted to off the president because what? I guess they consider him a Zionist sympathizer? Well, perhaps there is something wrong with the theory that fear is a part of Zog. But the point is, this is the wrong way to go about responding to this mess. If you're talking about destruction, you can count me out. Remember? My soldier's son wrote a very insightful post responding to this kind of foolishness. Quote, "Well, most of you are going to find this a rather odd verse of the day, but it's one that I thought needed to be said. 1 Samuel 26:23, the Lord rendered to every man his righteousness and his faithfulness. For the Lord delivered thee into my hand today, but I would not stretch forth mine hand against the Lord's anointed," end quote. And I need to explain, he's referring to the story of when David was being pursued by King Saul, and David had a chance to kill Saul, but withheld his hand from that because he understood it wasn't for him to kill the king. And then my son's post continues, quote, "A few months back, four soldiers were caught conspiring to assassinate the president. While they thought what they were doing was right, God has a purpose for putting this man in the White House. And if you cannot respect the man, then respect the position and the men that gave their lives to make it so we could have a right to choose the men who govern us. God raises up kings and princes, and he can bring them down just as easily. He doesn't need us to stick our hands in it," end quote. I thought that was an excellent observation. We don't need to assassinate the president alleged. That's not the answer. We do need to pray for deliverance from the oppression of wicked and unreasonable men, but it is not for us to use the sword, okay, independent of duly constituted government, which is charged with the power to execute wrath upon evildoers. A little Romans 13 for you. So what is a Christian to do? Or in other words, when the government comes for our guns, what do we do? Okay, when or if the government violates our constitutionally guaranteed rights, must Christians acknowledge and submit to authority when it acts contrary to the authority granted to it by contract with the people? This is a very important question, Americans, and Christians especially need to pay attention here. The Bible says we are to submit ourselves to, quote, every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. Whether I didn't Bible thumb alert you. Are you okay? You hyperventilating? Do you need oxygen? Need to call 911? Are you all right? Do you almost faint to hear the Bible quoted on a talk show like this on your radio station? The Bible thump alert. Bible thump alert! Quote, we are to submit ourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether it be to the king as supreme or unto governors, as unto them that are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of them that do well. End quote. That's in 1 Peter chapter 2. It is not enough, my friend, to simply dismiss this from having any application on us because in America we don't have a king. The fact is the Constitution is effectively the ruling authority of the land and it takes the place of a human king. So if one of its governors acting under the authority of the Constitution with the powers delegated to him from that contract we have with government called the Constitution, we are obliged to submit to that ordinance. But what about those cases where the government acts or persons representing the government act contrary to the authority granted to it by this specific spelled out contract with the people? Well, you see, this becomes one of those curiously colored horses of Oz. Now, Paul lived during the Roman Empire. And in that empire, persons who had the status of Roman citizens had certain privileges and protections under law that others did not enjoy. If you were not a Roman citizen, for example, a local magistrate could beat you and imprison you almost at will. And Rome cared nothing for it. However, if you were a Roman citizen, Well, then the law of Rome trumped the local authority. An appeal could be made to Roman law for protection against the abuses of local authority. Now, Paul was a Roman citizen. And in Acts chapter 22, verse 28, we read about a time when Paul was arrested and was being prepared to be, quote, examined by scourging, end quote. Now, it was a brutal time. One method they had of ascertaining the truth about an accusation laid against you was to beat you until you gave up and told the truth, or proved your innocence by enduring the beating without confessing. Pretty bizarre. In other words, make the trial of accusation worse than the punishment for which you're asked to confess, and then the idea is the guilty will almost certainly confess, but the idea was that a truly righteous man would never confess to the dishonor of his name. So yeah, I know, it's pretty dumb, but you know, Rome, and by the way, the Catholic Church thought that was a pretty effective way to go about things. Anyway, this was something that was perfectly legal to do back then, unless you were a Roman citizen. Then, according to Roman law, the Roman citizen had certain rights, and one right was to have witnesses arrayed against you and an opportunity to be heard and to defend yourself and so on in a court of law. And you couldn't be beaten like this before you were legally condemned. So what did Christian Paul do when the authorities in his day were violating his rights as a Roman citizen? Well, he challenged the arresting officer. And he said, quote, is it lawful for you to scourge a man that is a Roman and uncondemned, end quote? Well, let's put a stop to that foolishness. So what does a Christian do when an authority attempts to abuse our rights protected by a higher authority? We appeal to the protection of the law from the higher authority. That is, in our case, the Constitution. But exactly how far do we go with this? What are the biblical parameters? What are the limits that govern us in cases like what we see developing in our country today? Now, I've run out of time for the show today, but I will be preaching on this topic Sunday night at 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse. That's 1310 West Bedarivia Road in Santa Maria. 6 p.m. Sunday night at the Lighthouse. What is a Christian to do in times like these? You'll find the answer clearly stipulated in Scripture, and you'll find the answer to be somewhat ironic, but not funny. I've lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. Now you call and let me know that you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. Need to hear from you. Give me a call. Appreciate very much those of you who have sent in some gifts to help us with broadcasting costs. I can't tell you how much that means to me personally, what it means to us in our effort here in our job, in our project, in our goals. But really, I want to thank you and give me a call. If you can't send us any money, at least you can give me a call. Call 1-888-770-8000 and say lights on if you agree, lights off if you disagree, or go to our website, thebrainmassageshow.com. All one word, lowercase, thebrainmassageshow.com. Click on the Contact Us button, follow the prompts, send me a letter. Write me as long a letter as you like. I always respond to my email from listeners. And if you want me to call you back when you call, let me know and I'll do that. And so, my dear friends, call me or write me, lights on or lights off. I want to hear from you. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.
Ask 100 churchgoers what connects them to their church, and you'll get many different answers. Most, however, would not mention truth as their number one concern. Why? For many, church is about opportunities for socializing or family tradition, and the issue of truth is taken for granted. There's something wrong when a nation boasts 78% of the population is born again, with many of the largest churches in history, and yet we are in a moral freefall, and Christianity is increasingly held in contempt. Think about it. For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturdays at 7:30 a.m. and go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com. The Brain Masseur is waiting to massage your brain with scintillating insights.